Okay, so this is day three of our Live the Life You Want National Federation of the Blind Senior Division Retreat. And we will begin, as usual, with our lead instructor, Wayne Marshall, with cane travel. So here you are, Wayne.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back for day three and with cane travel. And today we have Robert Wilkerson joining us as our instructor. And today Robert's going to talk about outdoor travel. Yesterday we had Winford Haynes, and he spoke about more indoor travel. And today Robert's going to discuss outdoor travel. And just give you a little background about Robert. Robert graduated from Louisiana Center for the Blind, and I think it was like 2012. And then Robert came to the Colorado Center for the Blind in 2013, where he came there for some training to be an O&M instructor. And I had the pleasure of being one of his instructors for that. And it's good to see that he got a certification. He's a certified orientation mobility instructor through the National Blindness Certification Board. And Robert has been an NOMC now for about 7 years. He's been recently working in New Mexico, the center in Alamogordo, New Mexico there. Robert's good to have you with us today, and we can get the ball rolling.
Hello, everybody.
Get the cane tapping.
Yeah, most definitely. Again, I just want to thank y'all for the opportunity, you know, thank Wayne for taking me back to my high school days, making me feel like I'm coming out the football tunnel with the introduction again.
Excuse me one second. I apologize for the interruption. Michael, do you want to record this?
Was the cloud not recording?
I didn't see it, so I just wanted to confirm before we got started. I apologize.
I thought I heard it say it was recording.
I did too. So.
Yeah, it's
okay. It's my fault. I'm sorry.
That's good. But yeah, like I say, I want to thank you guys for having the opportunity to be a part of this, especially Wayne. I kind of keep in touch with him a lot. And Winford, man, I heard a lot about you through the late Frank Flores, man, at the commission, man. Frank used to talk real good about you, man. I'm kind of embarrassed to go after you, man, because you like a legend, you know. You supposed to. If I knew Wayne was gonna set me up like that, man, I would have picked another day. But yeah, man, Frank talked a lot. He talked good about you, man. But like I say, I've been certified for 7 years. I got a chance to go to LCB. You know, I started losing my vision in 2006 due to glaucoma. I was born with 20/20 vision. I drove and everything. So I got introduced to the blind people in 2011 because I'm originally from West Palm Beach, Florida. I went to the center down there in Daytona, and I attended my first NFB convention in 2011. And here's the funny thing. I was with some sighted. My sister, they was 20/20. I was told them about it, and they wanted to be a part of it. So the whole time we at the convention, you know, we asking people where to go, and we asking blind people where to go. You know, they had my sister was like, "Why you guys got the shades on?" They was like, "We go to Louisiana Center for the Blind," and I met a few from Colorado Center for the Blind, and they just was telling me like the training they had, and I was like, man, I want some of that training. And I was like, are you guys blind? One girl was like, yeah, I can't see anything. And I told my sister, I say, you guys can see, and here we are asking blind people who can't see nothing where to go. I think I need to follow them. And I left my sister them the whole convention, and I was interacting with blind people, you know, just trying to figure out how to be blind. Like I say, my sister them, they can see, got 20/20 vision, eye contacts, and here I am, we asking totally blind people where to go, and they taking us to the exact place where we need to be. And I told them then, I don't need y'all no more. I'm going with the blind people. And so good thing my counselor, she knew about Louisiana Center for the Blind because her and Roland Allen attended there back in 1985 when the center first was opening. Her name was the late Miss Johnny Slayton. And she made it happen, and I went there and didn't look back, man. And, you know, it just was a blessing because I was one of those blind people that didn't want to be blind. You know, I still had a little bit of vision, and here I am walking and running into stuff. Like I heard a lady say 2 days ago on the call how, you know, having the cane makes a big difference, you know, because, you know, I would rather look cool running into something with my cane versus me just running into something and people saying, hey, what is this? What is he on? What's wrong with him? So, you know, the cane is a, is part of my everyday life. And I couldn't unmute yesterday as well because I had my daughters, but I heard the one guy from Georgia saying how he got a cane at every entrance and exit at his house. And I just laughed because it reminds me of me, because I got them by the basement door. I got them up by the man cave in the garage. I got them by the front door. I got one in the car. Well, I got two in the car, collapsible and a straight cane. So it's just like, it just comes with the territory of, you know, being a confident blind individual and making a part of your everyday life. So enough about me. You know, I'm just going to get to some outside travel and, you know, using different techniques outside and, you know, picking up on environmental cues, sound cues, and, you know, parallel, perpendicular traffic, cardinal directions, you know, things that we can use indoor and outdoor, but a better way how to use them outdoor. As far as, you know, when you identify different surfaces, you coming out of your house, you know, if you got a couple steps, it's good to know how many steps you got there, but don't just get used to count steps anywhere else, because any structure that's not yours, you know, it could change. You know, some people might have 20 steps here today and decide they want to add on or do some remodeling. Then you go there still trying to count the steps and you encounter a problem. So it just comes with being confident. You know, you don't have to count stairs and things like that. You just got to listen to the cane and pay attention to what the cane is telling you. Sometimes when we get overconfident, we can get ourselves in trouble because we're like, well, dang, how I missed that. If we weren't too cocky and was listening to the cane, it tells us everything we need to know. Especially if you're in the perfect arc and you clean both sides of your body and just being one with the cane. So that makes a big difference in a person's everyday life, being comfortable with the cane. Outside, you want to always have your head up when you're outside. You don't want to get caught with your head down trying to listen too much. Or even if you got some usable vision, then you still want to have your head up, because the sound is totally different when you have your head down versus walking with your head up confident. Also, pencil grips and stuff, you know, identifying shorelines, going up and down sidewalks. You know, if you stay on the east side of the street and the street runs north and south, you know, you can use cardinal directions. That's a big thing when traveling outside. You know, like Wayne said yesterday, sometimes you might not have the sun, so you just still have to be confident as a traveler to know, like, even if you don't have the sun and it's pretty overcast that day, you can think, well, I know I live on the east side of the street and my street runs north and south. So if I go out to the end of my driveway and turn right, you know, you're going east, you head north on the east side of your street, because that's what side you live on the east side. So you can know you turn right, you're going north. You turn left, you're going south. And if you're coming up out of your house or wherever you live and the sun's facing you directly in your face early in the morning, you know you're facing due east. So those are things you just really have to just like instill in yourself on a daily basis. Like, and it comes with time. You just can't get caught up trying to master cardinal directions and master different cane techniques and stuff. That comes with repetition and being confident and using your cane. The more you use it, you're going to get better with it. It's just like Braille. If you don't use your cane, you're not going to be as confident when you're going to be double tapping, almost like if you was playing basketball, they'll call it double dribble. You're tapping too much on one side and things like that. So you just gotta learn the different traffic patterns. Like, okay, say if you're going, like the same thing, you're coming out of your house, you go, you're heading north, and you got a car going the same way you're going, you know that's car going north. Then you got a car that's coming towards you, but going behind you is going south. So that would be your closest parallel traffic, because just going the same way you're going and it's right next to you. It kind of gives you an idea of, a lot of people get scared of traffic because, you know, I don't want to go into traffic. But I always tell whoever I'm working with, you know, traffic is one of your best friends, because if you veer it off, you kind of know you got a reference point to where you want to know you want to go back to. Also, when you hear a large volume of traffic, that is going to make you more in tune with your cane to know, hey, I need to use my cane and pay attention to what my cane is telling me. And that noise that's directly on my left, which is my parallel traffic, that is where I don't want to go. So like I always tell people, like, if you just listen to the traffic, it'll tell you everything you want to know. It'll tell you, like, if it's a large intersection, like, it's a pretty busy intersection. And sometimes, you know, residential traffic be different from, like, you know, the downtown traffic and stuff like that. It all depends on what area you in, but 9 times out of 10, the residential traffic is be pretty much calm. And, you know, with the busier, like when you get the more restaurants and things of that nature, that's where the volume of traffic picks up. And also identifying, you know, different curve, like the curve cuts, knowing you coming into a street. That's the main thing. You always want to pay attention when you're sloping down and stuff. You always, if you feel yourself sloping down, 9 times out of 10, you're coming out. You're coming down the sidewalk into the curve cut. You're coming down the driveway. So you always want to pay attention to that as well, because pretty much when you're walking across driveways and things of that nature, you one foot tends to be higher than the other because it's kind of slopes down towards the road or towards the gutter or whatever you have right there. So paying attention to where what your cane is telling you and what your feet is telling you as well, because you know it's sloping down. You're like, okay, I'm going towards the road, I'm going towards the gutter or something. So those are things you can pay attention to as well. And residential streets as well as large intersections and stuff, all of them have is raises in the center of the street, which is called the crown of the street. So that kind of lets you know when you're crossing streets, when you go to going up, you're making a steep incline, not too steep, but a nice incline. You know you're at the top of the street and you're at the center of the street. Once you get to the center of the street, you start sloping back down, then you know you almost crossed the street. So those are other things you can pay attention to as well when you're crossing streets, the curve cuts, the crown of the streets. And sometimes you might not even have curve cuts and stuff. So I would just listen to the volume of the traffic and kind of step off the sidewalk, but making sure I'm still not in the road as close to the sidewalk as I can, make sure my cane is clean in my body, and just observe it for a second. You're not in a rush, especially I would hope if you're going to a doctor appointment or something like that, you will always have another way in case you have to walk or you have a different ride set up or something. But if you're not in a hurry, when you're in unfamiliar areas, you want to just pay attention to different little things, because the environment tells you a lot. You know, if you got the truncated domes, that's like usually at street crossings and in between the curb cuts and stuff, you got truncated domes that let you know, hey, it's a street right here and stuff. A lot of people call them the Braille dots, but the proper name is truncated domes. So those are some more things that's important. And also just knowing where you're going, just identifying like the address system, you know, pretty much like if a street is running north and south, in most cases, you know, if you're running north and south, the odd number is going to be on the west side of the street and the even number is going to be on the east side of the street. And it's vice versa. If the street's running east and west, you know, you're going to have the odd numbers on the north side of the street, and on the south side of the street, you're going to have the even numbers. But it could change in different cities. People have, I haven't seen it too much, but I know Colorado, like they and Littleton area, they zero barrier and stuff. It's pretty crazy how the address system switches there. So, you know, you just have to be confident and, you know, ask questions, be sure to ask the right questions and ask it the right way, because sometimes people give you other information you don't need and that can get you disoriented. So that comes with also making sure you're confident, you know, and when you ask people questions, you know, you kind of relate back to what they said, but in your own way to kind of get them idea. Okay, I'm just making sure we touching bases. So you just want to be careful about how you ask questions as well. Also, you know, just using the cane and you know, the cardinal directions, and those are not just something you can use outside. You know, you can use them inside. Like say you get dropped off at the mall and it's like 4 o'clock in the evening and the sun is directly behind you when you're going into the entrance. So you know if the sun's behind you, the sun's to the west. So you got to be going east. And so you just kind of work with that. All like everything as blind people, we can use anything that can help us be successful as a blind person. That's why they are called alternative techniques. And once you get the proper things that we teach you as an O&M instructor, you kind of introduce them to yourself in your own way. You kind of know you got the proper way of doing it, but sometimes people might have neuropathy, you know, arthritis and other different cognitive issues where they can't, the cane don't work best for them in open palm and stuff. So that's why you have to, but we teach you the different cane techniques so you can use them in different situations that you may encounter on your own. So everything we teach you as a cane travel instructor, it's a tool that you use, and then the alternative tool comes in when you make it work for you. You're doing everything, you know, if it's comfortable and it's working for you and it's getting it done safe and efficient, that is part of being confident. And you know, just like I say, every day, even as an O&M instructor, like right now, I live on almost 4 acres in the mountains in New Mexico, and my, my property is crazy. So every day when I'm trying to do stuff, cause we got ducks and chickens and stuff. So I'm trying to herd up my two little girls and make sure all the chickens and stuff done. I'm finding different ways to make my cane work for me. I'm not using it as a support cane of like I'm doing long jump or nothing, but I'm using it and got my girls and everything's been done in a good way and nothing's going wrong. And yeah, I slip and fall. Yeah, cause I'm on rocky terrain, but I'm using my cane and I know where I'm going. I know how to use my cane. And I use cardinal directions in my everyday life. I use it around my, cause I got a bunch of trees and stuff. I got dogs that's like to run around. So I make sure I got a cane and it's everywhere I need it to be. And I even got a hiking pole. Like when I'm going on a steep area, I'm trying to do something my wife wants this done. I make sure I got my cane and the hiking pole in case I do slip. I won't hurt myself or I won't break my cane trying to support me. So it's all about just everything you can do as a blind person, you know, to help you be successful. Like get out there. Don't be afraid of like if you're not doing something right or if you cane, you know, what are you using, folding cane or straight cane? We teach with the white long straight white cane, but some people, like I say, they have been taught other ways and it works for them. That's called alternative technique, as well as alternative teaching. Like everybody got different ways of teaching, but we all trying to reach the same thing, make sure people are blind, confident individuals and making sure they live in their everyday life without like being hindered thinking blindness is a disability. I don't think blindness is a disability. Blindness is an inconvenience. That's why we got the kind of structural discovery training we have. That is the best kind of training to help people figure it out, because everything as a blind person, a confident blind person, is about trial and error. You're not going to just ace everything you're going to do as a blind person. You know, like none of us is super blind, but we all trying to reach the same goal, being confident and you know, making our mark in everyday society and letting people see past our cane. That's why we changing what it means to be blind. That's why we using our cane. Like, it's not, I love my cane. I wish I would have, like, when I first started losing my sight, it took me 5 years of being blind before I went and got some training. And I'm like, man, this thing, if I would have done it, but I didn't accept it. So if the first part of me being confident as a blind individual was accepting it. And once I accepted it like that, man, it's so many resources. Like, even though we in trying times right now with the pandemic and everything, just look at like these Zoom meetings and stuff, how the Federation coming together and making stuff virtual so people can just, you know, still have that line of influencing to help them be successful. I think Ruth have a hand raised or something. It said somebody had a hand raised, but yeah, just,
I don't know, but we'll take questions in just a bit. Robert, I like what you're saying in terms of us, that's using the structured discovery method to teach, and that some things don't work for everyone. And I think the structured discovery gives us the opportunity for people to figure out what does work, but initially we do provide them with the structure, with the correct way of holding the cane, the correct way of walking with your cane and being in step. And people have some physical issues that make limit their ability to hold their cane a particular way or to walk a particular way, but yet we teach them the correct way to do it. And then they have to come up with alternative methods that work for them within that structure that we provide for them. You were talking about, the traffic. And mm-hmm. I know that I teach my students, that traffic is your friend. Don't be afraid of traffic, because traffic indeed does tell you where to go or where not to go. It helps keep you lined up when you're walking, and it tells you that where the traffic is on your left or right and not to go that far over or veer into traffic. So we shouldn't be afraid of it. We should embrace it and use it to our advantage. Like when you're talking about crossing driveways when you're outside, the tendency is to go along with that slope, and you can find yourself veering out to the street. But as you said, one leg, normally you'll find that one leg at the street is on your left, the right leg would be higher. So that that would be a great indication that that's a driveway that you're crossing. It's not a curb cut. Don't turn and face it. Go across that.
I remember when you taught me that. You taught me that 2013 when I was working with a student. I always remember that because I couldn't get that into a student like to help him know he was coming across the driveway. And he said, "Hey, like you haven't noticed like one leg be higher than the other." And I'm like, "Man, I felt so crazy because here I am trying to. I know that for myself, but trying to get somebody else, I just didn't think of it that easy to just tell them, hey, one leg should be higher than the other. Like you should just know if you're sloping too far down, you're going toward the street. But if you go all the way across with it, like uneven, like one leg higher than the other, till you get back on even ground, that's when you know you're across the driveway. But yeah,
exactly. And when you're coming, you know, you're approaching a street or intersection, every street, you know, they don't all have curb cut.
Yep.
So, in that instance, you do have to listen to your cane. You do have to realize that you're approaching traffic. There's traffic, that's coming across your chest at that point. You have traffic either on your left or your right, but you are approaching traffic. And you have to find that curb that's in front of you because you're getting closer and closer to traffic. And you may be looking for a curb cut, but there may not be a curb cut. And so sometimes you have to, you know, align your feet accordingly to cross that street. And I think one of the advantages of listening to that traffic flow and knowing how large a street is. And one way you can tell that is by, like you said, by the volume of traffic that is in front of you or beside you at that intersection. And I tell you what, I always tell people, if you have good cane technique, good arc left and right, when you're crossing the street, that's going to definitely help you cross that street straight. And a good pace, you know, a good gait when you're walking, a good stride, if you will. When you're crossing that street, you want to have a good pace, and especially if it's a larger intersection because it's large and you want to get across that before the light change. And that's why I tell students, hey, just stand there for a bit or a cycle or so and see how quickly that light change. That's one way of, you know, understanding that traffic flow. So it can help you know how quickly you need to get across that street. And like you said, Robert, you know, you'll feel when you come to the center of that street, it goes up and over. You're going to come to the crown and it's going to start heading down. But certainly, even the larger the intersection is, you want to get across that intersection as quickly and as straight as you can. And that just takes some good practice. And again, you have that parallel traffic on either side of you. It's going to tell you not to veer that way. And having good cane arc, again, not too wide on that either side will keep you from veering to that side. The wider it is on one side versus the other, the chances are greater that you will veer to that wide side. So if you swing your cane, we were talking the other day that, you know, windshield wiper syndrome, if you're going way to the right, then that's probably where you're going to veer to. And the way to correct that is to really concentrate on having great cane technique, being aware of your arc shoulder to shoulder and walking within that arc. And having a good gait, good pace when you're crossing that street.
Yeah, exactly. And I always like to tell people too, like, when you're trying to pick up information and you're not sure about something, that's when your feet, when you're not sure, plant your feet because your cane can give you all the information you need. I tell them go 180 degrees to your left and all the way around 180 degrees to your right, all the way around. You made a 360 around you. So you know everything that's around you. So you might have just overshot the sidewalk and by just playing your feet and pick up information with your cane. If you're not, I like to say too, if you don't know how to swim, don't go deeper in the ocean because the farther you just keep going and you're not sure, the more you're going to get disoriented. So the best thing to do is just stop and try to pick up different sound clues around you that you can't tell you what's around you and just don't panic. Like, cause if you panic, it just open up.
But not when you're crossing the street. Though,
no, right? Not when you cross the street. No. Once you step out there, you got to go. Yeah.
You got to go and you got to keep going till you reach the other side. Don't stop.
Yes, sir.
That can confuse the drivers even. Yeah. You know,
especially not in the middle of the street when you're already out there. No, that'll be just go. just go till you get on the other side. I don't care if you don't make it across in the curb cut. If you have to step up, just step up and get out of the road, then figure it out. So, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, so it just like I say, being confident, it comes with every day you sell the cane, especially because you might be confident. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I'm just saying, like, it just comes with repetition and making sure you use the cane. And like, if you low vision or you just like you losing vision rapidly and stuff, just try to use the shades in areas that you know already and stuff. Like, take baby steps. Like, you know, like a lot of people are just terrified of using the cane. They terrified of being blindfolded and, you know, just not having that. Even if, like, I don't see some people who just got light perception, but just knowing they don't even have that light perception up under the shades, they freak out. So just got to take baby steps and, you know, just give it a try.
Right. So you mentioned sun location, Robert. Mm-hmm. The sun can also help you when you're crossing the street. If you realize when you line up to cross that street where the sun is, okay, and you want to keep that sun in the same place, if you have that sun available to you to use, if it's in your face, if it's directly in front of you, then you keep walking to that sun. If you're lined up, you think you're straight, then keep that sun at the same place, because if you turn, if it's in front of you and you turn to the right, that sun's going to become on your left-hand side more. It's going to move. If you veer left, it's going to be on your right-hand side. And the same thing if it's behind you. If you turn, it's going to be on that other side of you. So you just want to keep it in the same place if you have that available to you. And that's how the sun could also be helpful, even when crossing the street, you know.
You can use sun, traffic, everything helps. That's always in your everyday life.
Then the shoreline, some of us don't have the curve as a shoreline, but there's always going to be a textual change of some sort. Whether if you're on a blacktop road and then you just have gravel on the side, you know, you want to keep that as your shoreline and stay close to it. Don't go out to the street. Just keep that on your same side and follow that as your shoreline. A lady was talking the other day about going out to her home, going out to her mailbox from her home, but she didn't have a good shoreline. And, you know, what could she use? And so you have to use everything that's available to you. And it's not always a curve that you're going to have. It may be grass line, but you keep that as your shoreline outside. Because asphalt, and you can tell the textural differences in those, you know, from concrete, grass, asphalt. That's one thing I really liked about at the center in Colorado there. You had a lot of those different variants of surfaces. And that's one of the first things we would do is, I remember when you were out there, Robert, I'd take you there and say, look at these different surfaces.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to use these surfaces. Yeah. So that's important, just to be aware, be conscious, spatial awareness of where you are in your environment when you're traveling. We talk about spatial awareness and knowing where others are, but you really want to know where you are and be accountable for yourself. And some of these techniques don't work for you because of physical limitations. You may have to alter them or adapt them to what works best for you with your situation.
Another thing too, as far as like Wayne was saying, just always knowing where you at and making sure you in charge. Like, even if someone is helping you, making sure you comfortable. Like, if you needed to go sight a guy, make sure you got your hand on their elbow low enough to where they can move it around and you can feel the motion of their body, so you already know which way they're about to turn, and you still got your cane up and pencil grip playing just past your road. You got your right hand on their elbow. As far as travel, as far as like you taking public transit or the door-to-door pickup or Uber or Lyft, asking the right questions, you know, knowing how to store your cane in the car. A lot of time people don't know how to, you know, they just sit there. They don't know what to do. They don't know if you know how to get in the car and stuff like that. So you have to be aware of how to react to those situations, as far as like they just standing there and they'll just blow the horn. They're like, okay, you know, at least pull it. When you get in the car, you can shine some light on them as well. Say, hey, I'm blind. A lot of people might still have usable vision, but I don't. I'm totally blind, which I shouldn't have to tell you how blind I am. But you see the cane, like you should have let the window down and say, hey, I'm over here. Or, you know, sometimes you have people who too helpful. They get out and grab you and take your cane, but just knowing, like, you always want to know where your cane is, and if something happens, you can get to your cane, and asking the correct question when they drop you off to where you're going. Okay, am I facing the door? Because sometimes they'll just drop you off and pull off, and you don't know which way the door is. But, you know, just asking those questions, making sure you're in charge, and showing that confidence, and knowing how to ask questions as well is important. Because, like I say, sometimes people give you too much information that isn't helpful. So just always want to make sure you're in charge, and you go ahead, Wayne.
No, I think getting good information is a part of being independent. It's using that information so that you can be independent. So it's nothing wrong with getting great information and using it to your advantage so that you can be as independent as you want to be. So what about sound outdoors, using sound to your advantage outdoors, Robert?
Sound, like the outdoor sounds, like it depends on the area you're in. You know, if you kind of in the downtown district or something, you know, they're going to have something that, like, most of the time downtown, if you're close to hotels and stuff, they have revolving doors and water fountains, and like even at the parks and stuff like that. That's how I used to, the park we go to with my wife, like to go jogging at, like, I always know where the tennis courts and stuff is, because I listen to the racquetball court. I listen to, you know, what a water fountain is in reference to where I am. So you can use a lot of things that's around you every day and put that in your travels every day, kind of knowing, okay, you can use them for little reference points and stuff. Like, you might have, if you're in the downtown area, like when I was down there in Colorado, I always used to, when I'm downtown on by the 16th Street Mall, I always want to smell the burritos, because the dude always got the burrito stand up and stuff. So little things like that every day, you kind of know, okay, I smell the burrito, so I must be at this street and stuff. You can kind of go to, and then you can smell Starbucks. You can smell like McDonald's, like everything around you. You can kind of use that every day if you get turned around and just listen. You kind of in that spatial awareness as well. Like when you can kind of tell when you coming up to a car that's parked, coming up to the walls or something, because you can feel yourself breathing. Your breathing changes and the way stuff sounds changes. So just little stuff like that every day you can pick up on that's around you, and you wouldn't even pay attention to it until you start getting out more and using your cane and just like, hey, I know that sound. Like, okay, then you might hear a convenience store. You know how a lot of them have, when you open the door, the bell rings and stuff like that. And Walgreens, when you open, they got the sliding doors and stuff like that. You can always pay attention to when you're trying to get somewhere. It's more like grocery stores. If you listen, you'll hear where people coming out. You'll hear where the shopping carts going and coming. So you just have to like put little stuff like that in. And you know, when you go into storage, you first got the carpet, then it open up, so you got the tile. Pretty much left or right, you're gonna find the bank or the customer service and things like that when you go into store. So it's just little things like that you can pay attention to. Even when you go inside, it don't have to be outside. You can go inside stores and you can kind of hear what's going on and pay attention. And 9 times out of 10, when you go in somewhere and somebody going, hey, can I help you, or can I be any assistance today and stuff, and you just have to pay attention and show that confidence. Like, show them you know where you're going, and I'm trying to get to where I'm going with a little bit of information. So just every day, and then sounds might change. It might be a day where it's froze over. They don't have a water fountain on. You still have to just listen and just see what's around you. You know, you're close to a stoplight. They might have the chirping birds to let people know when it's safe to cross or things like that. So it's different sounds, and a lot of times you can't have those every day, but you just have to be aware that they're around.
Those are certainly things you can use. And you did mention the chirping birds that are at intersections, and that's a good way of determining when it's time to cross or not to cross. You can hear the traffic stop and go, understand that flow. Sometimes it may just be a stop sign, so you know they're going to stop and then take off a lot sooner than a light cycle. You hear more cars idling at the intersection as opposed to just individual cars at a stop sign. And so that would give you indication of the traffic flow or the street size that you have to cross. So any of you, any of our other NOMCs, would like to, share something? Okay. So if not, then, we can certainly open it up to questions. If anyone have some questions for, Robert or any of our other, cane travel instructors.
Well, this is Ruth.
Hello, Ruth.
Come on, Ruth.
And could you review for people, because some people are really new to cane travel, stowing the cane on public transportation and or in a vehicle, or maybe even in a restaurant if you don't, you know, if you're using a straight cane, because I think this can be confusing for people. So maybe if you can give them some suggestions, that could be helpful.
Yes, most definitely. Pretty much in restaurants and stuff, you know, whether you at a booth or, you know, you out in the open, like what I like to do is I don't really like my handle or my cane to touch the ground. So if I do got it, laid outside the table or something, I make sure the handle is like on top of my shoe or something like that. So if I need to grab it, I can just reach down and grab it with my foot. And a lot of times you have to be careful too to stop it from rolling as well. So you always want to, even if you got it along the booth on the outside, not close to the wall, I would still like keep my foot on the outside of it so it don't roll away or be in somebody else's way. And then if you're inside the booth, you can kind of just like tip first, like slide it down and making sure along the wall, even like on airplanes and stuff like that, the straight cane, if you get it, the tip going forward and your handle back, it's kind of like one motion. You push the tip forward and then you lay the handle back towards you, like where you're sitting along the wall. Sometimes it'll get stuck, but pretty much I haven't had one to break yet. And in the cars and stuff, you kind of want to feel in between the seat and where the seat belt is, like if you're on the passenger side or in the back. I hope you're not driving, but you just want to make sure you always want to put the tip forward and the handle backwards. I like to say the tip is the motor and the handle is the steering wheel. So you put steering wheel towards you going towards the trunk of the car, kind of like, but you always want the tip going forward and the handle going back along the floorboard in the car. And on public transits and stuff, like it depends on, you know, if it's the door-to-door service or just a city buses and stuff, I kind of just like to lean my cane straight up against my body, make sure it's not in no one's way, so I still have access to it. And or if I'm sitting down, I still put slide the tip forward in between the seat closest to the wall or wherever I'm sitting along the floorboard, but still, like I say, I have my handle raised a little bit. And sometimes you don't even have to like lay it all the way down. You can have it just like it's almost a sitting down pencil grip, but still it's stored away good enough where to own, it's not in no one way, but you still can grab it when you need to.
Excuse me, Rob. We have a question from a 907 area code. You're unmuted.
Hi, this is Helen Ekman.
Hello.
I have a little story to tell about snow and ice and why using a white cane made such a difference for me, having been taught. It was a normal day in Alaska, February, and snowing and lots of snow on the ground. And I always took the city buses to get where I was trying to go. Because I have MS, I needed to use a walker for strength to hold on to it and be strong enough to walk. So I needed to get across town to my eye doctor's office. And he was in a different part of town than I usually traveled. So I found out the bus route I would need to take. And I got on the bus to get over to the part of town where I was. And the bus driver would not let me hold my walker where I normally did. He took it away from me, folded it up, and squeezed it between two seats in the back. When he got it out for me at the end, I heard screws falling out of it. He dropped me at the side of the road in about 2 feet of snow. I knew which direction to face and that I would have to cross a 4-lane highway with a median in the middle where I could stop, because there's no way I could walk across a 4-lane highway in a long, fast enough time to get across it all at once. So I had to do that. And if I hadn't had the training with my long, wet cane, I would not have known how to listen to be safe, because there was so much snow, it was very quiet, even with the cars. I could hear them, but there's still a muffled sound with snow. I got to the middle of the road on the medium, and it was 2 feet of snow there, so I had to maneuver a broken walker over that, across the street, and into my doctor's office. And I want you to know that I 100% believe that without my training in using the long, wet cane, I would not have been able to accomplish that. When I got inside the doctor's office, I called the city, and they bought me a new walker that day because I had a trip to go to RSA in Washington, D.C. the next morning, so it gave me an opportunity to advocate for myself. But just to say, there are other ways that a white cane can help you.
Yes, ma'am. I'm just glad you had the experience of using the white cane and made it to your destination safe and stuff. But he had no right taking your walker, because that's a tool that you need to be independent. So, you know, but some people don't know. So you just have to advocate for yourself. But I'm glad you did, and glad you made it to where you needed to be safely. And, you know, just keep using that cane and keep overcoming those trials and errors and keep being independent. Somebody else had a raised hand.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi, this is Carol in Alabama. I want to describe a situation and ask you what would be the best way to handle it. I've got a curb cut. I'm crossing the street. It's an overcast day, and I really can't tell which direction the sun is coming from, and I probably should have paid more attention to cardinal directions before I got out of the vehicle. But I'm crossing with the traffic, and I get to the crown of the street, and a car turns right on red behind me. It's a noisy vehicle. And so I'm trying to figure out how to keep from veering. I know I don't want to veer, you know, toward the parallel traffic, but how do I keep from veering the other direction in order to find the curb on the other side?
A lot of times when we veer, it's because we not placing our feet correct. So you always want to make sure your feet is lined up proper when you're at the intersection, and make sure you lined up evenly with your closest parallel traffic. And that always, and if you veer to the left, that means your arc is too wide on your left. And, you know, if you veer to the right, that means your arc is too wide on the right. So you just want to make sure you clean your both sides of your body evenly. And if it did, like, some people just have a problem with veering. And if it's a busy intersection like that, and you're not confident because you're going to veer, well, you can always just box the intersection to get where you're going versus cross the smaller street first. Like, if you're on the southeast corner, and you're trying to get to the northeast corner, and if the traffic gets busier that way running east and west, I would cross from the southeast to the southwest, then go from the southwest to the northwest, and then vice versa, just to get where I'm going. And that comes with repetitions as well, just like going to smaller intersections and crossing, and like even you can go somewhere in the residential area where you're familiar with and traffic not as busy, but just practicing, making sure you line your feet up properly, and you know you clean each step, and you got a good arc, and that kind of, and the faster you walk, the straighter you walk. If you tend to try to pick up information with your feet as well as you can, you're gonna veer. So I would say just keep your head up, make sure you're closest to your closest parallel traffic, and just, you know, just it comes with repetitions. But if you're not sure and it's a busy intersection, what I would do, like I say, I would just cross the smaller one. I would box the intersection, just going from the southeast side to the northeast side, and then it's a four lane intersection, you know. So that's what I would
do. Yeah, and Carol, I think what Robert is saying, if you're not comfortable crossing the street and not having the stopped traffic on, for example, the parallel traffic is on your left.
Yeah.
So when you're crossing that street, you're not going to have the stopped traffic to your immediate right initially. You're going to have to get to the middle of the intersection to have that.
Exactly.
So either you're going to have to be comfortable, right. So you're going to have to be comfortable with keeping that parallel traffic exactly where it's at, not veering away from it, but keeping it where it's at. Or as an alternative, what Robert's saying is that initially to get started crossing that street, you can turn the other way and put the stop traffic on your left to help you stay lined up and cross that way and do a double cross to get to the other way.
Okay, I lost you there when you said turn the other way. What does that mean?
So instead of going straight ahead with the parallel traffic on your left,
cross the street that's on your left.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
That way the busier traffic is on the right.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, because then you won't have the problem of the turn right on red traffic.
Exactly.
That's right.
Okay.
We have a 913 has a question. I apologize. We just had a lot of hands here.
Yes. Good day, everyone. My name is Randy Pfeiffer, and I'm in Kansas. And it's something I haven't heard that I think is pertinent to everyone. And a little story. I was walking in a park, and the park had streets and sidewalks and a road that went through it. Well, as I was walking, I happened to be near the gutter. My cane went down the grate. It didn't go down the grate all the way, because I had my hand, my wrist through the strap and I didn't lose my cane. If I would not have had my hand in the strap, I could have lost my cane, and that could have really been a disaster.
One thing I want to say about the hand between the strap, you know, that in certain situations, that wouldn't be a good thing, because just to say if you got your hand in your strap and you got your cane out, like you want to cross the street, and for instance, a car turned right on red, and it grabs your cane, and it runs it over, your hand is the cane. So I always say, you know, the strap is good for hanging the cane up and stuff, but in certain situations, you don't really want to have your hand in between that, because if something goes wrong and something grabs your cane and you, it got your wrist as well, you could break your wrist. So I mean, it's cool to have your hand, your cane in open palm, and you kind of have your thumb around the strap, but just having my hand in the strap like that, I wouldn't do it all the time. But if that works for you, I mean, I'm not saying no, but I would just tell you to be careful with it. But like metal grades and stuff like that, when you shoreline, and that comes with clean tapping and sliding, if you clean both sides of your body instead of just sticking to the gutter, like you'll know if a grade or something coming up, because your cane will slide versus tapping the slide, you'll catch on to something like dragging, like what's called touch and drag, tap and slide. So that works for you. And I'm not saying what you're doing is wrong, but like in certain situations, you wouldn't want your hand in the cane strap like that, because if you needed to let it go or something real quick, if like something grabs the cane or yank it or something, it got you, your body as well, because your hand is in the strap. So, but like.
Okay. Continue
my story.
Randy, that's what I was going to say. Randy, finish your story. You want to hear the rest of it, but thanks for that. Go ahead, Randy.
I guess until we get him back, Sharon has a question as well.
I think she muted me.
There he is.
And the other part of that, as I was continuing in the park, I didn't have my hand in the strap, and I dropped the cane for some reason or another, and it rolled under a car. I didn't know that. So luckily there was a sighted person that was seeing the whole thing, and they got my cane for me, but it rolled under the car. There was no way I would have been able to find it. So in two case situations where it went through the grate, I was saved by having it in the strap, my hand in the strap. But when it dropped, when I was on a slope and crossing the parking lot, it stopped. It dropped and rolled. And when it rolled, you know, I was lost. So two different situations. And I was just going to say that you don't know when to hold them, when to fold them.
Yeah.
But, you know, so one case it was good. The other case it was not. So I'd like for you to speak to that.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. And that comes with trial and error using the cane, man. Like I said, you got to find what works, and when we figure everything out on what's the perfect and safest way, like to stop our cane from rolling, because you could be traveling with somebody else and it's totally not your fault and they hit your cane and there go your cane gone. I'd have been in situations where I'm working with a student and we crossing the 4-lane intersection and my cane go, but good thing we was at the crown of the street. It rolled. It beat me across the street. So, you know, in certain situations, it's out of your control. So, like I say, it comes with trial and error. But I'm glad you made it out both of those situations safely. And like I say, I wasn't saying what you was doing was right or wrong. But like I say, even you say in certain situations, you don't know when to hold or when to fold.
This is Jerry. I just had a comment to that. And sometimes, there again, you can't always have a spare cane on you. But that in that situation, sometimes if you have a folding cane, you can have it with you or in a backpack type of situation. And also, it's probably a good idea just to practice some techniques with your feet. Like if that cane rolled like that, to be comfortable enough to walk a few feet without it. And sometimes I've even had to, when you talked about going under the car, I've had to get on all fours and find that cane. I mean, sometimes you just flat out gotta do what you gotta do to get that back if you don't have a backup.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And like I say, in my situation,
logically, logically, if you do lose your cane, you have to think about that if you're on a slope, which way would that cane roll? Which way would it go? And you may start there first, you know, looking that way toward which way it would roll if it's gone, gotten away from you. But,
we have a few more questions, and we only got about 5 minutes left. So Sharon was next. Thanks, everybody, for your questions. We apologize for if we're rushing.
Am I unmuted?
Yes, and you're far away.
Can you address right turn on red, since somebody just brought up the four-lane intersection. I cross one. The side street hardly ever has traffic. This is a regular lighted intersection where you push the button. I have had to stop and wait for somebody to turn before I could keep crossing. You can't keep going because you don't know if they're texting. You don't know if they'll see you.
Yeah, that's the thing, the right turn on reds and stuff. Like, even if you press the button, you always kind of want to wait a second or two before you cross anyway, because
it's usually pretty quiet.
Yeah, and I always tell people when we doing intersections and stuff, you know, if you got a car that's right on, that's right there trying to turn right on red and you already lined up to cross.
Yeah, when you wouldn't.
When you already lined up to cross the street in front of you, sometimes it's good to kind of look over at that car to get their attention, to let them know, like, hey, I know you're right there, so you don't have to try to beat me. Because a lot of times they trying to beat you, and then they think, okay, I can make it. And sometimes, like I just said, in certain situations, it's out of our control. So that's why we have to, like, be good travelers for them and us. Because a lot of times the cars, like, some people just naturally always in a hurry and always just road race.
Yeah, so you could be halfway across or two-thirds and come out of the loop.
Yeah, and the thing about it, if you halfway across, you just got to keep going, because a lot of times if you stop, the car tries to go around you while keeping that same speed.
Oh, no, it's usually in front of me.
Oh, in front of you, yeah. So,
I've never had one go around me.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to wait. If you can wait a cycle or two, if you're not sure at a busy intersection, it's cool. You can wait because, like I say earlier, if you're not in a hurry, you're not trying to make a doctor's appointment or something, like, it's okay to get a little more information to be successful.
Right.
And Sharon, I've had to stop in the island in the center, the median. And get on the median and let traffic go, because they're going anyway, and it's such a large intersection, it's just best to stop and be safe than sorry. So I know what that's like, but normally
one more question. I apologize, time's just about out, but there's a 612 that
hi, it's Judy. You don't have to apologize every time. It's okay.
I'm just trying to.
I know. But I want to say a word about veering, the positive part of veering. First of all, these gentlemen are right. We should cross the street as straight as we can, but some of us just never will. So if I'm going to veer, I want to veer away from the intersection. It doesn't matter if I get to the curb cut. As long as I get across the right street, if I don't end up at the corner, it's much safer than having walked into the intersection. And I'm not saying we choose to do that, but I'm saying that sometimes veering has its place.
Yeah, if you do veer away from the traffic. That is true.
And let me just say this before you go, guys, is that it's best that we allow ourselves enough time and try not to be in a hurry. So that you can, make a good conscious a decision about your travel and not being in a rush and not being afraid, and take your time and pay attention to what you're doing so that you're not in a hurry and don't panic. And I'm with you, Judy. I'd rather veer away from the intersection and get across the street than into the intersection.
So, hi, this is Winford, and I wanted to comment on a couple of things, but I agree with that too. I'd rather veer away from traffic than to go into it. One thing when you're talking about veering, one of the things that I try and work with my students on when I know that they veer, and you guys, when you're out traveling, kind of think about this, but, what I do is I have my students kind of hold their cane directly between their feet in a pencil grip as they're listening for the traffic and determining when to cross and everything. And then what I have them do is as they start their crossing, is I literally have them extend it directly in front of them. And I actually have them take maybe one or two steps and then start arcing the cane, because now you're directly behind your cane as you're going across. And then make sure your arc is nice and balanced, and it works a lot of the time. But that's kind of how I get them started going across the street. And then one thing with storing the cane on the city bus is, like, I usually kind of cross my ankles over the the tip of the cane and just lean it against my shoulder. That way it kind of keeps it out of the aisle. And plus, sometimes you want to make sure it's against your body, because if it's straight up and down, people sometimes will think it's a support pole. They come running onto the bus and grab it, and you're like, whoa. So those are my comments.
That's true. That's so true. We got to, in the interest of time, we got to go. And guys, thank you for joining us today for
the
session of Cane Travel. Tomorrow we'll be joined by Duncan Larson, and she's our only lady in the group. Thanks, Duncan, for that. And so guys, take care, and we'll have opportunity to talk about this more at between 2 and 3.